5:08 on the Central Coast. I'm Dave Congleton. It is Friday, February 16th, 2018. Good to be with you. If you've got Monday off, hey, more power to you. Turns out we do too. I can't explain it. Boss says take Monday off. So Craig and I will be away, but we have a best of Dave. We will be back on Tuesday with Kevin Harris from Slow Repertory Company. Annie Lorenzen will be here. Also, we have a local psychologist who wants to come in and talk about the psychology behind shootings. We're going to give our next guest all the time he needs, and then anytime after that, we'll do last call and sit around, take your phone calls, and get you ready for the weekend. It is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. Matt Hoy is back on this broadcast. His website is hoystory.com. We are going to continue the conversation about guns and Florida and mass shootings. But I also want to start on a personal note, because when Matt isn't on this show and causing trouble on the internet, he's also a teacher. Matt, nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I wish it were under better circumstances.
Yeah, and you were in school today.
Yes.
I'm just talk a little bit about what that is like to go into a school the day after, 2 days after a mass shooting, and what's on the students' minds? What's the atmosphere like?
You know, I'm not sure, as far as most of the students, that the atmosphere changes a whole lot. There are, you know, little kind of throwaway lines that you know, 9 times out of 10, most of the year, you wouldn't say, hey, watch it.
Yeah.
But, you know, 2 days after a school shooting, you know, I'm killing it. No, yeah. Don't say that. You know, you have to be careful. You have to be very careful about what you say.
But are you looking over your shoulder? Are you walking into a classroom and are you more aware of your environment?
I certainly am. You know, you're in a classroom. I substitute teach, so which classroom I'm in changes day to day, depending on who I'm subbing for. Sometimes I'm on a second floor classroom, and it's like, okay, if there is a shooting, where do I kind of direct the kids to gather and huddle where they're most protected? This morning I was in a first floor classroom, and I was discussing. I was substituting for a senior teacher, and he had a student teacher in taking care of his classes. And during the prep period, I was discussing with the student teacher, you know, it's what happens in this classroom. Because you've got windows on one side of the wall covering the entire wall, and if there's somebody out there, then you want kids kind of ducking down, hiding as close to beneath those windows as you can so they can't see in. Whereas if they're in the hallway on the other side of the door, you want them against the other wall so they aren't spotted from the window in the door. And if you've got two shooters, one outside, one inside, you're fish in a barrel.
And I'm not going to ask you where you teach, but does your school do any kind of training? Do you train with the students for these kind of scenarios?
As a substitute teacher, I'm not really involved in that.
Okay.
They don't pay me a whole lot. They don't set aside a whole lot of time for that. I'll tell your students, you know, where I teach them. People there know, you know, I come on your show. I substitute teach largely at Paso Robles High School. My wife is a teacher there. I will substitute teach for her. I will substitute teach for a co-teacher. You know, so that's where I usually am. The Tribune ran an article, I believe it was either today's paper or yesterday's paper, about what each school district kind of does as their training. In Paso Robles, it is called ALICE, which, if I can look this up real quick, stands for ALICE procedure: alert, lockdown, inform, counter, and evacuate. So my wife has basically said what they tell her is if a shooter kind of gets into her room, or if it starts in her room, throw staplers at him. That's, you know, throw staplers at him. Okay. Anything you can find that's heavy.
There is some kind of training discussion.
Yeah, well, okay. Again, right. there's 5 steps to it. Right. Part of it's, you know, evacuate if you can, run away. Great plan if you can do it.
Sure.
Here's the thing. I spotted this on Twitter. This was originally posted to Facebook today. This is from a woman named, I have no idea where she's at, But her school district, the school district where she sends her daughter, Samantha, who's a preschool or a kindergartner, does the same sort of Alice thing. And she posted this on Facebook today, and this is the most, it hits you like a ton of bricks. I'd just like to read this. She says, at a recent PTA meeting, we brought in some of these police officers who work closely with our school district to talk about Alice, which is their approach to handling active shooter situations.
Yeah.
One part of it is that if the shooter does enter the room where the kids are at, the kids are told to run around, yell loudly, throw things like books or wads of paper, etc. Just be a distraction. At first, I was like, really? You think a shooter armed with a machine gun is going to confront Samantha, that's her daughter, armed with a book and say, oh, never mind, I won't kill her? And then it punched me in the gut. If she's face-to-face with a shooter, she's going to die regardless. The goal will be for her and her classmates to make their deaths take 20 seconds rather than 10. That's 10 more seconds for other kids to run, 10 more seconds for first responders to get to the scene and take out the shooter. A lot of lives can be saved in 10 seconds. Just to be clear, this is the current state of affairs. We live in a country where kindergartners learn how to maximize the number of lives they can save as they're being massacred.
Matt Hoy, on this broadcast, you were telling me when you came in that in the state of California, there are restrictions. It's really how a school can respond.
Yes. This started about 3 years ago, starting in January 2016, in response to absolutely nothing, frankly. Before 2016, if you had a concealed carry permit, you were exempt from laws banning guns on campus. Okay? In the tens of years, in the decades before 2016, no concealed carrier had ever shot a gun on campus, had never brandished a gun on campus, had never had an accidental discharge anywhere on campus in the history of the state. But in their, you know, desire for gun-free zones, they said, look, if you got a concealed carry permit, that's no longer an exception. Okay? At the same time, they removed that exception for concealed carry permit holders. I'm not sure whether they introduced or if they just allowed it to continue to be there. They said, hey, if the school superintendent or the person he designates wants to give written permission for staff or teachers or parents to carry a concealed weapon on school grounds, they can. So they left it up to the school at the district level for every district in the state. And what happened was something they didn't anticipate. There were about 5 or 6 school districts that said, you know what, we're going to take that exception. We are going to talk to our staff, talk to our teachers. We are going to train those who want to be to defend our students. The nearest one to us here in SLO was the Kingsburg School District, which is just over in the valley. And they said, we're going to take that option and we are going to use it to defend our kids. Starting in January, and Democrats in the legislature and Jerry Brown did not like that, so they removed that exemption last year, effective January 1st of this year. So now the only way that you can protect school kids on school campuses in this state is to have police on campus, and you can have gun-free zone signs.
What do you think of my idea about the National Guard?
I think it's great.
Okay.
I want them uniformed. I want them carrying big guns and, you know, spread out.
For 3 months. Just for 3 months. Cooling off period.
And I would hope in those 3 months that absolutely nothing would happen in this state or any other state as far as, you know, gun violence on campuses go. And that the state of California would reconsider removing that ability for school districts to train their staff or teachers. Now, I don't want all staff or teachers. I want only the ones who, you know, have the right mindset, who have the right training, and who are willing to do that.
Matt Hoy is on this broadcast. His website is hoystory.com, hoystory.com. We'll come back and continue our conversation. Your phone call still to come. I'm Dave Congleton. This is KVEC News Talk 920 and FM 96.5. Take a moment and remind you that, yes, we do stream live on the internet at 920kvec.com. We also podcast. So if you miss any part of today's show or yesterday's discussion about guns, it's there waiting for you at 920kvec.com. Any number of ways to stay in contact with this broadcast, this station. We're here weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk KVEC. I'm Dave Congleton. My guest is conservative blogger Matt Hoy. His website is hoystory.com. We're talking a little bit about the ongoing conversation we've been having about guns and shootings in schools. And as we get to the specific case of Parkland and the high school this week, Matt, let's come back to the issue of statistics. Yesterday, I kept repeating this statistic about 18 shootings in 2018 alone, and that is from a group called Everytown?
Everytown for Gun Safety, I believe, is what their formal name is.
And now the media has pounced on that and pointed out that that is not totally correct.
Yeah, they want to goose their numbers to make it more of an issue. I mean, it's an important issue. But if it's, and it's happening far too often, but if it's happening even more often than you know and you're not hearing about it, then it helps them politically. I wish journalists would be a little bit more skeptical at the outset instead of taking their word day one, and then the next day you run a correction. But I think you counted the number at 7. I looked at that, and I'm thinking it's more like, as far as what I would consider a school shooting, it's maybe less than that.
The Washington Post, which is probably not your favorite source, has a very detailed presentation where they trace all mass shootings since Whitman and the University of Texas Tower in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
More than 1,000 people have been killed in these mass shootings. It's not just school shootings.
Right.
Mass shootings. But in 2018, Matt, they say about one a week. I'm trying to find it right on my screen here, but they give specific examples. It's Kentucky. It's Florida. And other places. So it may not be one every 60 hours,
right?
But as you pointed out, it's still a lot taking place.
It's too much. It's too much. And I'll concede that, you know, all day long.
All right. Now, I want to get to the FBI thing, because I think this is something else that we can agree on. And for our listeners who have been following, the FBI is now in hot water because it seems like they missed a real opportunity here.
Right. Back on January 5th, someone apparently close to this Parkland shooter, and I don't like to use their names because I think part of this whole issue is they do it for fame.
We just call him the shooter.
And so the Parkland shooter, somebody called and gave an FBI tip line and gave detailed information on who he was, where he was, what weapons he had, his mental health background, what he had been posting on social media and writing about, and all of that apparently went, it was enough to identify him, unlike this YouTube video comment that we had the other day where it's just a name and it's, even though it's spelled kind of a little odd, you know, good luck finding the one you're looking for out of 330 million Americans. But this was detailed information, and the FBI took that information and did absolutely nothing.
Do we know why? Has there been any reporting on that yet?
Well, the FBI, when they announced that they had received this call, said that their procedures weren't followed, that it should have been investigated, then it should have been passed on to the Miami field office, and they should have, you know, done something about it. But as to why nothing was done, they don't have an answer yet. I assume there'll be some sort of investigation. Someone will eventually step forward and say, "I accept responsibility," and then they will continue on in their job with no repercussions and collect a nice fat pension when they retire.
It sounds like the Justice Department has ordered a review of the FBI's handling of the tip.
Yeah.
It came in on the FBI's general call line, where personnel process thousands of calls each day, some more serious than others. When the process works, the call taker records information from the tipster, runs basic database checks on the person at issue, and if the matter appears serious enough, passes the information along to agents in the field. That clearly did not happen. The warning about the shooter should have been passed to the local FBI office in Miami, but these protocols were not followed. And who knows what might have happened?
Yeah, you don't know. The thing is this isn't the first guy the FBI knew about who went on to commit terrorist act. The Boston bombers, the Russians had notified the FBI that these guys were questionable. The Fort Hood attack by the Army major, the FBI knew he was contacting a terrorist in the Middle East. The Pulse nightclub shooting down in Florida, they had gotten a heads up about him too. The San Bernardino attack with the two people there, they had been on the FBI's list too.
Back on the Washington Post article for a minute, just before the news break, Matt Hoy on this broadcast, quoting, using a stricter standard, there have been at least 7 school shootings in 2018, more than one each week. Shootings near New Orleans and Los Angeles, shootings in Kentucky, Arizona, and Texas, and now on Wednesday in Parkland, Florida, 17 people dead, undetermined number wounded as of the reporting. Mm-hmm. So there's at least one a week.
Yes. That now, not all these are mass shootings.
Right.
At least a couple of them looked like they were negligent discharge situations. One, some kid grabbed a school resource officer's gun and pulled the trigger. There was no intent there really to do harm, and how that happened, you know, that should be investigated. Another one, it looked like there was a criminal justice class that was being held in a school. That, you know, they handed a loaded gun to a student. Again, no intent to do harm, just negligent discharge.
When we come back with Matt Hoy, I want to talk specifically about the AR-15. And we'll take your phone calls as well. We're live, we're local. It's the Dave Congleton Show. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. My guest continues to be Matt Hoy. His website is hoystory.com. We're getting his take on the shootings in Florida and the fact that now, just using the standard by the Washington Post, there have been at least 7 school shootings in 2018, more than one each week. I want to talk, before I start welcoming phone calls, Matt, and I defer to you on guns, what exactly is an AR-15, which was the weapon used in Florida?
Well, first off, AR doesn't stand for assault rifle.
Right.
It stands for Armalite Rifle, which is the company that made the thing. First thing back in the 60s. It is a modular semi-automatic rifle that's been sold for, you know, since the 60s, basically. It is a cousin to the M16 and M4 that's used by the military and has been since, you know, Vietnam era. But it's semi-automatic. It's one trigger pull, fires one bullet.
Unless you get a converter.
Well, the bump stock makes it so you can fire it faster. It takes some practice and some technique to get that actually working. The shooter in Las Vegas had one of those. I think a lot of people would kind of argue that he probably could have taken more lives and been a little bit more efficient about it if he hadn't used that, because that's you lose accuracy.
But the AR-15 was used at Sandy Hook, Vegas, San Bernardino, and others.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, it's easy to modify. It is not easy to make it into a fully automatic weapon.
Yeah. But 1.3 million are sold each year.
That sounds like a decent number.
I guess the fundamental question I have, and I'm just trying to understand all this, why does an 18-year-old need to buy and have an AR-15?
Well, you can use it for hunting. It's good, the 223, the 223 round or 5.56 round that it uses is good for, you know, hunting hogs, that sort of thing. It's illegal in many states to use that round to hunt deer or something because it's not considered big enough to humanely kill the animal. As far as the age thing goes, I'm kind of the opinion that we need to set an age for when we expect people to be adults and stick to it for everything, for smoking, for drinking, for buying a firearm, for being able to enlist in the military, for being on, you know, for having to get your own health insurance.
Right, but should an 18-year-old buy an AR-15?
Well, the thing is, and when you talk about banning AR-15s, okay.
I'm not saying ban them. I just want to know why an 18-year-old is able to buy one. That's all.
Well, if it's not an AR-15, there's things called a Ruger Mini 14, which fires the same round. You can get it so it looks the same way, and it functions exactly the same. A semi-automatic rifle is a semi-automatic rifle is a semi-automatic rifle. The fact that the AR-15 is so popular, you know, has to do with the kind of how you can customize it for the most part.
David is in Oceano on KVEC. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi, you guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I have, you know, I support the right for people to have firearms.
David, we can't hear you. Come.
Oh.
Are you there?
Let me call back a little bit. Sorry.
Well, no, I can hear you now. Right where you are is perfect. Oh, well. All right, well, we'll have David call back. All right, but I guess that's the point, is with a gun like that, why do young people need to have the gun? And the other part of the question then becomes, Matt, the importance of the year. I'm looking here at the article, 2005. President Bush signs into law a measure protecting arms makers and dealers from liability for crimes committed with their products.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about.
The NRA called it the most significant piece of pro-gun legislation in 20 years. Because in 2004, President Bush allowed the ban on assault weapons that had been enacted under President Clinton to stop.
Right. So the legislation they're talking about is called the Protection and Lawful Firearm, or it has something, it's Protection and Lawful Sale of Firearms Act, or something like that. And basically, what it did was, you can still sue, despite what a lot of people say, if you buy a Remington rifle and you pull the trigger and it explodes in your face, you can still sue Remington. Okay, if they make a faulty product, you can sue them. But you can't sue them if someone takes their product and uses it illegally. So, for example, Sandy Hook. That law has protected the Bushmaster who made the rifle used in the AR-15 used in Sandy Hook from being sued for what a criminal, a mentally ill criminal, did with it.
All right, let's try David again. David, you're on the air.
Is this better?
Yeah, much better.
Much
thank
better.
You.
Okay, thanks. Hey, I support the right to own firearms, and like Barack Obama, I support the Second Amendment. But what I do have a problem with are gun nuts. And,
gun what?
Gun nuts. Yeah, and I'll define that. Gun nuts are people who believe that the solution to gun violence is more guns in society. And generally, I've had many people even in the show say that if everybody had guns, we'd be in a better situation. And that's what I call being a gun nut, and we have way too many of those.
Matt?
Well, I don't know that there's much of anyone who wants someone who doesn't want to have to, wants to force a gun onto someone who doesn't want to own a gun. And I think
But what I'm talking about is that it seems like a lot of people, I might even put you in this category, Matt, it seems the solution to gun violence is to arm more people. You talked about it when you talked about schools, wanting more people, more employees at the schools to have guns. And yet, according to the statistics I've heard, every area, every country, that the more guns they have, the more gun violence there is. The more murders, more suicides, and more accidental gun injuries.
Well, a lot. If you want to get into gun statistics, we can do that. The thing is that over the past two decades, the number of guns being sold in America has risen substantially. And yet the per capita gun homicide rate in this country has been cut in half. So the more guns
still
is not
the highest rate in the world. If I'm not,
it
correct?
Is not the highest rate in the world.
Does the homicide rate include the mass shootings, or is that
it
separate?
Includes the mass shootings? Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, David.
Well. Anyway, I just think it's wrong. Gun nuts that think that we have to add more guns. That's always the go-to solution, and it never works. And I'll give you another example of gun nuttiness. It's all the people that come on the radio in public and let other people know that they have guns. If I have a gun, I'm not going to tell you. That's the smart thing to do. You know, to broadcast that you own guns, it's not going to make me any safer, and it's better for people to not know. And I think it just goes along with the gun nuttiness. Everyone, this whole idea of promoting the idea that these gun nuts think that the more people have guns, the less chance of their rights are going to be taken away, and somehow the world's going to be safer. And all those things, the reason they're nutty is because none of them are true. But they live their lives, they go on talk shows, they write columns, they even speak to school students along these terms.
All right.
And it's destructive.
I'm glad you called, David. Thank you. Me, if I owned a gun, and I don't, I'd tell the world because I wouldn't want you to mess with me.
Well, I will say this. I do agree with him to a certain extent. I think that there are, you know, Gallup does a poll, and they ask you if you own a gun in your home. And the number varies between, I think I've seen it low in recent years as 36%, as high as 42 or 43%. I don't think that's an accurate number. I think the number's higher because I think there are lots of people who do what he suggests and will lie about it because they don't want people to know they've got guns.
We go to Debbie in Los Osos on KVEC. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Debbie.
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Good. You know, I just had a friend out. We went to high school together here locally, and she now lives in Michigan and ends up in Chicago, you know, a lot. And you know, being from here, I'm kind of sheltered in, you know, my perception of the world because I don't get out a lot.
Sure.
But I asked her, I said, so is it really true with the guns in Chicago? You know, is it that bad? She says, it's unbelievable. She says, and what's sad, she says, it's illegal to have a gun in Chicago, and all the gangs and stuff know that. They've got their guns, so they know they can walk into a liquor store, whatever, and demand money, shoot them up or whatever, because they can't protect themselves. So there's that side of it, too. Yeah, you can, you know, make them illegal, and then the people that are going to cause trouble have them, and there's no control. And look at what's going on in Chicago.
Yeah, that's one of the problems you get. You know, there, unlike what the previous caller said, I don't think there's very many gun nuts of any sort who want everyone to have guns. If you are mentally ill, I don't want you to have a gun. If you are suicidal, I don't want you to have a gun. If you get depressed, I don't want you to have a gun. If you're a criminal, I'd rather you not have a gun. But when you pass laws to try and control that stuff, none of those people I just mentioned follow those laws.
Debbie?
Yeah, Dave, it's really sad. You know, it's a catch-22. How do you decide who's mentally aware or who makes those decisions, you know, that, well, you can have a gun, you seem to have it together, and you can't or whatever. But it's like anything else. If you have the tendency to want to steal or want to lie or whatever, and there's nothing to prevent you from doing it, you know, or if you're going to steal something with a gun and you know that there's nobody there that's going to be able to stop you, I think it makes them more apt to do it. And look at the shootings, the suicide rates, everything else in Chicago.
Well, but Debbie, come back to the main topic, please, which is about school shootings. What do you think we need to do to stop the shootings? Is it more guns?
You know, Dave, I don't know what it is with society or whatever, but, you know, there's not a good system for people that have mental issues. You know, there's no place for them to go get help. They can't afford the help or whatever. And how do you catch it? You know, I don't know what the answer is there. We've got a lot of people, a lot more people. And, you know, if, like they said, you know, that kid was on a list, I believe, or whatever, or they thought he had problems. But do you have a right to go say, well, you've got problems, you know, you can't have a gun? Or what? I mean,
yeah,
we're going to be running.
No, I think we do have that right. I think we do have that right, that if you're mentally disturbed, we have the right to say you don't have the right to own a gun. Do you have a problem with that, Matt?
I don't have a problem with that. He was being seen by psychiatrists, and the psychiatrists, you think they should have known that he had problems and should have reported him.
I appreciate the call, Debbie. Thank you. Matt Hoy on this broadcast. Our next caller is Don in Arroyo Grande. Hey, Don.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Don. Matt. I'm glad you guys are talking about this and talking about it in a fairly sensible way. The problem is not the gun. Everybody wants to make these gun laws. You look at Sandy Hook, you look at all these incidents that happened, and they broke many laws getting to where they were to cause the problem. The problem is not the gun. The problem is the individual and the availability to that individual. And in California, you got to be 18 to have a rifle. You have to be 21 for a pistol. There's more shootings and killings with pistols, because that's what the gangs use, than there are with rifles, and yet we have this whole hullabaloo about rifles.
But I'm talking about school shootings, Don. Let's try to stick on school shootings if we can.
Okay, school shootings. It happens to be that the kids play the games on the arcade and they want to get an AR. You know, big deal. They could do the same thing with a pistol. They could do the same thing with a semi-automatic shotgun.
Yeah,
semi-automatic shotgun isn't all hullabaloo, and it'll do more damage than an AR in a small confined space.
And another thing to, you know, let's not even if we're focusing on school shooting, let's remember the number one school shooting is Virginia Tech, and he used handguns. So again, it is a weapon, and you know, I'd love it to stop. The thing is, this is a fairly recent occurrence. 40 years ago, you had gun clubs on campuses.
Yeah, but let's be clear, gentlemen. No one is saying that we're going to wipe out the problem altogether. But can we make it better than what we have now?
Well, but we already have regulations. Everybody's talking about making a new regulation so they can pat themselves on the back and say they did something. The laws that we have are not being enforced. The individual in this case, there was two reports, according to what I heard this morning, that got to the FBI. Well, before I call the FBI, I'm going to call the local cops or the local people. So that means many people were informed that this guy had some problems long before it got there, and none of that stopped it.
Well, let's not make that assumption.
Making a new law on the guns isn't going to stop it.
We don't know that he called anybody else other than the FBI.
Well, the local police did say they'd had 20-some-odd contacts with this kid.
Right. I'm sorry, what did you say?
The local police did say they'd had 20-some-odd contacts with this kid over the past 2 years.
But we don't know if it was the same one who called the FBI.
We don't know if it's the same person who called the FBI, but he was obviously on local police's radar.
All right, Don, thank you. We've got Sean in Los Osos on KVEC. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, I'm just going to quote a quick article I've been reading. People can look it up. It's the Washington Post came out today saying that the accurate number that there hasn't been 18 school shootings in 2018.
Right, we talked about that.
You already hit that, okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's actually one a week.
Since 2013?
No, one a week, one a week this year.
Yeah, the article goes to define what a shooting is, and anytime a firearm's on campus, it's no good, don't get me wrong. But there's citing instances where a gun discharged in the glove compartment.
Right.
A bullet came through the window at school, which is, again, terrible.
Yes, but that's not totally accurate, if I may, Sean. They specifically talk about Kentucky and Florida and another case where people died.
Okay.
We all agree. All three of us are agreeing that too much of this is taking place. The debate now is, what do we do?
Right. Well, I wish I knew.
Armed guards at school, just as you were saying yesterday, one exit, one entrance, comprehensive reform.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Sean.
Again, you know, when's the last time you've been in a courthouse? You know, they have a metal detector there. They've got a couple armed bailiffs there.
And we should have the same thing in the county building. There's going to be a tragedy at that county building. Mark my words, I don't want it.
Right.
But they have it at the courthouse, but they don't have it at the county building. They're making a big mistake.
Well, and they don't have it in any of our schools either.
All right.
I don't like to make, you know, one intern you know, and have kids funnel through metal. I don't want that. I don't like it.
But they got to be safe.
But we're reaching the point where that's the best solution, maybe.
All right. Matt Hoy is here. He's here as long as we need him. Callers, be patient. I got to get this break in. And most importantly, I have to remind you that today's edition of Hometown Radio, sponsored in part by your hometown grocery store, Spencer's Fresh Markets in Morro Bay and Santa Maria. Open at 10 o'clock each and every night. Here are some great reasons to check out Spencer's tonight. Baja beef fillets on sale, $5.99 a pound. Boneless, skinless chicken breasts, $1.59 a pound at Spencer's. How about boneless beef stew meat, $4.99 a pound? You can also get Pacific rock cod fillets for $5.99 a pound. Medium peeled shrimp, $5.99 a pound. Navel oranges, 79 cents a pound. Large artichokes, 79 cents each. Locally grown avocados, guess what? 79 cents each. Also, holy cow, green bell peppers, 99 cents a pound. All this and more, so much more, only at Spencer's in Morro Bay and Santa Maria. Spencer's Fresh Markets, always worth the drive. Shop at Spencer's, your hometown grocery store. We're proud to have them as a sponsor, The Dave Congleton Show. Again, I stress that Matt Hoy is here into the 6 o'clock hour. Back on the phones we go. Scott is in Pismo on KVEC. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I believe there's two major contributing factors that could easily be resolved if the media would stop glorifying these people, plastering their faces all over the 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 8 o'clock news. These people think that they're martyrs. And then the video games, these ridiculous video games where you get points by killing grandmas in schools, it's absolutely absurd. It doesn't happen in any other country other than ours. I don't understand why, until the next one happens, this idiot's face is going to be plastered over the media, radio and TV, and I believe that that's the major contributing factor in this country.
I believe it is a contributing factor. Matt, what about the video games? Sorry. Go ahead.
I've played a lot of those video games and have yet to actually ever shoot anyone in real life. I'm not going to say that can't necessarily contribute to someone who's already a little off kilter or already has some mental illness.
It desensitizes you.
It can. Mm-hmm. It certainly can.
Well, we're talking about people that are already on the edge, and then you add these things. You add these things to their life.
Yeah,
not to mention being socially unacceptable in schools. And these are the ones that usually end up doing it.
I'm just not sure if you got rid of the video games that would necessarily solve the problem. Something else would set them off.
It would not solve the problem, but I think it would help. But I think the major contributing factor is the media, and I know you don't want to talk about it because you are the media.
No, you can talk about it, and I'm not denying it is a factor, Scott, but it is crazy to assume that a mentally ill guy who went out and bought a gun legally and went in and shot up and killed all these people did it strictly because his name was going to be on the radio and TV. That's unfair. It is a factor.
If you look a lot of their posts on their social media, like this last one, he even said that he's going to be famous. Well, what's making him famous? Books and movies aren't making him famous. It's the media's making him famous.
Well, but that's books and movies are part of the media, too.
All of them. I'm not saying it's all of them, but I think it's a major contributing factor.
I think
it is. If the media wouldn't say 2 cents about the shooter, of course the victims. They're the victims. They deserve to have their honor. But the shooter doesn't deserve to have his name plastered all over our media. It's ridiculous.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that, Scott. I'm just saying it is not the factor. And I think that is unfair to people in the press who are doing their job. And I think that it overlooks other issues such as access to guns, FBI dropping the ball, shortage of mental health support, any number of reasons. But I appreciate the conversation. We are off to ABC Radio News. Craig is standing by with the latest in Time Saver traffic and weather together. Matt Hoy is here, and so are you. We are continuing our conversation about guns and mental health and the FBI and all these interrelating factors. The question remains, how do we protect our children when we send them off to school in the morning? We're live, we're local. It must be the Dave Congleton Show.